face. Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night.
like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light, wrecked up like a douche, another runner in the night.
In the dark with the bones of the eye, the
wrecked up like a douche, another
runner in the night. With a bottle of a shoulder, feeling kind of older and trapped, and there it goes around.
All stations, clear the air lanes, clear all air lanes for the big broadcast.
Yeah, giddy up, partner. It's time for Lovelands in a track theater. It's me, DJ Nurse Annabella, on Kicks the Staff, 102.5 FM, and KPCR, 101.9 FM. In this episode, part two of the appearance with actor Mary Hagen. Yeah, keep on messing with that Nickelodeon slimes, and then put them on your butt.
Kids, following the action-packed Dukes of Hazzard this morning at 11, it's the fun and laughs of Slippin'.
Johnson, Russ Tamblyn.
What does it take to convince you that the dead do not always rest in peace?
Thank you.
You're listening on Lava Lamps in a track theater with me, DJ Nurse Annabella. You're on Kicks and Stuff 102.5 then. And KPCR 101.9 then. Yeah, keep on messing with that Nickelodeon slime and put it all over your face. You're trapped inside the terror dungeon of Lava Land Nature Theater.
As the desperate Guerrero. We'll be right back.
The towering inferno.
Oh, shit.
I'll be back with the whole fire department.
Thousand human beings on a journey to nowhere with one look.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. Cotton, Olivia de Havilland, Darren McGavin.
Any increase in pressure will crush this fuselage like an empty beer can.
George Kennedy and James Stewart as Philip Stevens.
My daughter and my grandson are on that plane.
Don't get too close to the door.
Now for the full interview with Seinfeld actor Larry Hankin.
Hey, Isabella, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing this morning?
Well, the same. It's sunny out, but I think it's kind of cold.
Yeah.
Right here in Southern California.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's kind of cold up here, too. Well, welcome
well,
to
I
the...
I hope it changes pretty soon.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show, Larry.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Congrats on your book, by the way.
Well, thank you. It's not out yet. It's supposed to come out, I think, in March, but
okay.
I'm finished it. I just got the book cover and the back cover, so it looks pretty good. So I
yeah.
hope it comes out in March.
Yeah, Steven sent me the picture of the cover. It looks great.
Oh, great. Oh, you got that. All right, yeah, fine. Well, yeah, I like it too. So, and the inside is even better.
Oh, wow. Can't wait to look at inside. So, what other projects have you've been working on lately?
Well, just that. Actually, what I'm working on, because I have to, writing a book is not what I thought it was going to be.
Really?
Okay. There's a lot of work in, once you wrote the book, which I thought was the big work job,
mm-hmm.
but once you write it, then it gets really complex. I mean, you have to, you know, keep on reading it and rereading it for typos, for editing changes. Then you got to design the cover and the back cover, and you got to get the pictures, and it's just one thing after another, and it's really weird. I never expected it. I thought, you know, you write a manuscript and then
uh-huh.
you send it in and they publish it. Doesn't
yeah.
work that way.
Wow, that sounds
so
more complex.
That's what I've been. Yeah, so that's what I've been working on. So as far as the projects that I'm working on, I'm still working on the book thing, because now that it's coming out in January, I gotta
uh-huh.
start figuring out how to advertise it and getting. I'm making my own little commercials for it, so there's
nice.
That. It's just really, I don't know if I would want to write another book. I mean, it's just the book part is easy. Writing the book is really easy
okay.
if you want to write a book. It's the rest of the stuff, you know. So
wow,
I'll see. I'll let you know in a couple of months.
I wasn't aware how complicated it is.
Me neither. That's why I wrote the book. I thought, well, I just write the book and then the money will just flow in. It's just, you know, just two things. But no, it's not like that at all. But I guess nothing is like that at all. I mean, show business is the same thing, you know, acting and stuff. You
right.
know, with the auditions and the costume fittings and the driving and the, you know, it's just weird. It's, I don't, you know, people, the one thing I try to avoid all my life is working in an office, especially in a cubbyhole, you know.
Uh-huh.
So that's mainly the driving force of why I'm in show business. I didn't want to be working in an office. But it turns out that, yeah, I'm in show business and I'm not working in an office, and that's really great. But there's other things that you have to do in show business that are just as weird as working in an office in a cubbyhole, you
yeah.
know. So I think it's just universal. No matter
yeah.
what, you want to dig ditches, you got to pick out the shovel, you got to clean it. You know, it's just weird. Whatever
wow.
it is.
Wow, that's really interesting. So, were there any TV shows you turned down or wanted to appear on?
Well, you mean in my entire life, or
yeah.
just?
Entire
recently since I wrote the book.
Well, entire life.
I wanted to be on all of them. Anything that I auditioned for, I wanted to be on, or I wouldn't have auditioned for it. So my average is, because this is a weird, trivia fact, but somebody somewhere keeps records of how many, I guess every manager or agent does that. Keep a record of how many jobs you are sent out on and then how many jobs you get. So while I was a functioning, active actor, I dropped out for a while, so that's why I say was. I'll go back, but now I've dropped out to write the book. So while I was an active actor, my average was I got 1 out of 5. So I had a audition 5 times and maybe I'd get 1 job, but the overall average is 7 to 10. So I was doing really good, I guess. You had to audition 7 times or 10 times to get 1 job. So that was so. But all the 4 others that I didn't get, if I got 1 out of 5, those are the ones that I also wanted. You don't go up for a job unless you want to do it. Although I learned that you have to pick before you go to the audition, decide whether you want to.
Nice.
I mean, some things are you don't want to audition for because it's just not where you want to go or the kind of acting you do, or there's that too. So I do turn down stuff. So I can say, no, I don't want to audition for that because it's just not what I'm ready to do. So I guess four out of every 5 jobs I went on, I wanted to get and didn't. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
So what were the names of the shows that you weren't on, like you wanted to be
on? Well, I mean, 4 times. Well, I've been on, I've worked on 200 shows.
Okay.
So if I got 1 out of 4, that means 4 times 200, or 400, I guess. Is that how it works? If I got 100, that means I auditioned for 400 shows.
Wow. Yeah.
I can't pick out one that I did. 400 shows I didn't want to do. But do you know how many shows there are? There's like hundreds of thousands of shows, so that's 400 is a drop in the bucket.
Dang.
As is 200, or I don't know how to do the math. It's I've gotten 200 shows, not 100. I've gotten 200 jobs, so 200 times, so it's 800.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 800 shows that I wanted and didn't get.
Whoa,
that's amazing.
That is.
I don't think there's any other job description where you have to. Well, no, maybe. Before I became an actor, I just wanted to get any kind of job, any kind of temp job, to fill in, pay the rent while I was looking for jobs. So, went to, cleaning up stuff or a banking job or. A lot of jobs that had to do with show business just to pay the rent. And I didn't get any of those either. So I would, I didn't want to get one of those. So my point is that I think any person who wants to get a job, you have to go on interviews to get the job, right? So maybe ordinary people get 4 out of 5 jobs or 7 out of, or 1 out of 5 jobs, or 7 out of, 1 out of 7 jobs, or 1 out of 10 jobs. In other words, you have to go for an interview on any job you get, and you don't get everyone. So maybe that's kind of normal in a weird way to get 1 out of 5 jobs,
wow,
or five interviews.
I know.
Maybe that's
just
all jobs are like that.
I noticed you've been on a lot of stuff. Are you proud of? I noticed one of your earlier movies is Lucifer's Women. Were you proud of being on that?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't have done it if, you know, if I wasn't going to be proud of it, I wouldn't have done it.
Okay.
But sometimes pride has nothing to do with it. You got to pay the rent. So if somebody offers you a job and you don't have the rent, you're going to take the job unless it's an incredibly awful job or, you know, something that's against your religion or whatever.
Right.
But, yeah, there's no job I took that I'm not proud of doing. That's kind of weird to do something that you wouldn't be proud of doing. Again, unless you need the money for a job or an operation or, you know, to bury your parents. I don't know. That's kind of, it's a weird question to ask because if you're doing the job, see, a long time ago, somebody told me something really interesting, a big time agent, manager. He said, I said, you know, well, could you define selling out for me? And he said, Larry, there's no such thing as selling out. And it took me years to come around to figuring out what that guy told me. But it's true. There is no such thing as if you need the job, if you need whatever somebody else would say, hey man, you're selling out. That's on them, not on you. You're doing the job because either you want to or you have to. So I don't understand the phrase selling out. I don't understand it. I think it's a misnomer, to be kind. But other than that, it's in the person who's saying you're selling out. It's on them.
Wow.
It's selling out to them. That's all.
Wow, that's interesting point of view. Wow, that's really deep.
You run into that if you're always auditioning. You know, am I doing this? Am I selling out? You know, like Bob Dylan, and where that question came from was, this is how many years ago this was. Bob Dylan did what was scheduled to do an Ed Sullivan show. This is, I mean, it was black and white TV in those days. So Bob Dylan was, so it made the news. Hey, Bob Dylan is going to be on the Ed Sullivan show. And so the time came, I guess, the day or two before, or maybe the day of the television show. And the newspaper said Bob Dylan walked out on the on the show. He's not going to do it. He decided not to do it.
Wow.
So the reason given was that Bob Dylan auditioned, or they wanted him to be on the show, and they said, you can sing any song you want, but you have to tell us what it is. So he said, I think it was Gates of Eden, something Gates of Eden, whatever. I can't remember the name of the song, but it was a protest song. So they said, okay, but when he showed up on the show to do the show, to be televised, they said, no, we don't want you to do that show because, you know, it's very white, you know, clean show. They don't want protests, whatever.
Yeah.
So they said, no, do another song, do a love song. And he goes, no, I said I wanted to do this. You said it was okay. So I want to do that song, Gates of Eden. So they said, no, you can't do that. We want you to do a love song, not a protest song. So he said, either I do the song I wanted to do or I won't do any song. So they said, well, we want you to do a love song. And he said, okay, goodbye. And he walked out. So his manager, I said to him, the manager, I said, now Bob Dylan walked out on the Ed Sullivan show. Was he trying not to sell out? Was that, you know, what was that? Because that was the conversations that were coming up because of Bob Dylan walking off the Ed Sullivan show. If he did it and sang a love song, would that be selling out? And that's when the manager said, there's no such thing as selling out. And he told me the reasons I just told you. And it took me a couple of years to come around to the fact, to realize that what he was saying was actually true, that selling out is in the eye and the mind of the person saying you're selling out. Because, hey man, if you're doing it, there's got to be, you're doing it for a reason. And if the reason is, I want the money, or I need the money, or I want to be on the show because of the publicity or whatever. Whatever in the mind of the guy saying, or the girl saying, you're selling out, whatever causes them to say that word, that line, you're selling out, that's on them. That's according to them. But if you're doing it, you're doing it because basically at bottom, you want to do it for whatever reason. I need the money. I want the money. I want the publicity. I love doing the show. I want to do this on television. Whatever it is, that's good enough. You know, you got to live your own life. You got to have your own rules.
Wow.
That's all.
I never heard it like that.
Well, but that's the way I think about it.
Okay.
So, you know, do what you want.
Cool.
And don't listen to other people is basically what he was telling me.
Whoa. That's really deep. That's cool. It's sad to hear about Cindy Williams passing away lately. What are your memories being on Laverne and Shirley?
Well, she was just a real human being. You know, she had no airs about her. You know, she was Cindy.
Okay.
Whether, you know, we would either be talking together or having coffee or we were doing the show, she was Cindy, you know. Penny Marshall was different. She was a show business born into it. You know, I mean, her brother was a producer. Her sister was, her older sister was either an agent, a manager, or a production assistant or a producer. I mean, she comes from a show business family, you know, and everybody was in television in her family. So Penny Marshall was a show business kid. She was born into it. Her brother produced the show. And she was an actress, but she was a great physical comedian, Penny. And Cindy was an actress.
Mm-hmm.
And so they both fed off one another. It was a good combination because each one's expertise helped the other one, you know.
Wow.
Cindy got some good clown physical comedy chops from Penny, and Penny got acting chops from Cindy.
Wow, that's
awesome.
That's all. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. There. It was a good marriage of acting. You know. Certain people go together. They just work. They work well together. When I was in the committee, I was with Hamilton. One of the actors in my committee days were on the stage, improv, up in San Francisco, was Hamilton Camp from Gibson and Camp. He was a folk singer. But he was a really good comedian and a good actor. And whenever I did an improv scene with Hamilton, it always was great. It was fun being on stage with him, and we would always get, you know, good laughs, and the scene would go pretty well, generally all the time. So I always, you know, try to get him as a partner. You know, there was an opportunity to do it with Hamilton, I would always pick him. And other people I would not do scenes with because they didn't always go well. I you know, and it's kind of telepathy, ESP, just feeling each other out, knowing what the other person likes and does on stage, you know, and you just, so yeah, Cindy and and Penny worked well together, and I noticed that. It was a good vibe.
Wow.
That they had.
Yeah, I definitely see it, the vibe. I really love that show. What are your memories being on Benson?
I don't remember that too well. I know I did it. In other words, my memories, because, you know, a lot of people ask me a lot of questions about all the shows, and I've done about 200, so it's hard. But the ones that I remember clearly, and I can tell stories about, like Penny Marshall and that, is shows where something happened that kind of etched it into my brain. So I remember it. And on Say Laverne and Shirley, it went really well, and I didn't get along with her brother, and I got along with Penny's brother, the producer. I didn't get along with him. I had a couple of arguments with him. I mean, small, very small, but disagreements.
Wow.
I had disagreements with him, where he was being a producer and I was being an actor. So, and then I got along really well with Penny because I rehearsed a dance scene with her. So we had a relationship going of dancing. And we had to rehearse a lot. So that we became friends because of that. Cindy, I didn't have too many scenes with, so I didn't know her too well.
Okay.
So it depends on what happened during the show I was on, and not much happened during Benson. I mean, it was just a job, a regular, ordinary acting job. You go in, you memorize the lines, you rehearse, you do it, and you go home.
Wow.
So that's all I remember about Benson. Because nothing really untoward or bonding happened. It was just, you know, you go in, you do the show, you go home.
Wow.
And that's generally what would happen if I did 200 shows, and I wrote the book about 45 of them, because about out of the 200, maybe 45 only, or maybe a little more, and I just had to cut them out, maybe 50 out of 200, do I really remember stuff because something happened that there was a bonding mechanism going on during rehearsal of some sort, you know, either we rehearsed well together or we got along, you know, during lunchtime or something. So something happened where I remember that because blah, 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 blah. But Benson, no, everybody was, it was just a regular, ordinary, normal show.
Okay.
You go in, you put your costume on, you say your words, you don't bump into the furniture or other actors, and you go home. That's
wow.
it.
Did you try out for the show Alice?
Which show is this?
Alice.
The restaurant show?
Yes.
No, I didn't. I would have liked to be on that. I think I knew somebody who was on that show. I don't know if it was... Was Howard Hessman on that?
I think so,
yeah. Maybe.
How was it like working with John Candy?
John was like Cindy in that he was a real human being, man. But he was really funny. I mean, he just thought funny.
Okay.
That's like the best compliment I could give anybody. I mean, in comedy, anyway.
Uh-huh.
He thought funny. I mean, he just... I remember when we did the... I worked with him a couple of times in Trains, Planes, and Automobiles, and with... what was the other one?
Armed and Dangerous.
Candy. Armed and Dangerous.
Yes.
Right. So, in Armed and Dangerous, they sent just me and John Candy... and his other cohort from Second City, his buddy, I can never remember his name, but there was just the three of us. John Candy and the other guy was in Second City, and then me. Okay, we went out there with a second unit crew, which means, second unit means a wannabe cameraman, a wannabe director, and a wannabe sound man. second unit. So just, let's see, there's six of us. The director of the movie didn't go because it was a garbage scene in a garbage dump. So we went to the garbage dump, and there was no director, and there was nothing written. It was just basically it was John Candy and his buddy were looking for something in a garbage dump.
Yeah.
Something was stolen or lost. I don't remember. So the director of the movie said, "Larry, go with them." You know, I go, "Well, what do I do? There's no writing. It just says they look for whatever it was they were looking for in a garbage dump, which is an impossible job," which was kind of funny because it was a small object. So he said, "Well, it doesn't matter. Just go out with them. You know, just do something." So I go, "Okay." So all three of us went out, you know, John, me, and this other guy, and the camera crew, and we went out there to this garbage dump, real huge garbage dump. And we didn't know what to do, you know, like, well, what does he want us to do? Look, you know, just looking, that's not, I mean, there's nothing, you're just looking. There's no action, there's no dialogue, there's nothing happening. So John started to get ideas. He'd say, well, let's look for stupid stuff. Just pick up stupid stuff. So that's what we started to do. And then I picked up an old shoe and John Candy picked up a comb with hardly any teeth in it. And he...
Your holiday in hell.
You don't really know much about Halloween. Halloween, the barriers will be down between the real and the unreal. And the dead might be looking in. The last great one took place 3,000 years ago when the hills ran red.
You happen to know anything about this Cochran?
All I can tell you, mister, watch out.
Season.
He's watching you, Flanagan.
A fly landed on your screen.
Look, Jack, you've been landing planes for 13 years. Face it, you're burned out. You need this rest.
So Jack Chester is taking that lead.
Oh, this is great!
Renting a beach house.
4:15, this is it.
And getting the family ready for the best month of their lives. Quiet and secluded.
Come on, get out of here.
With outstanding facilities.
Sit down, reward. All right.
Perfectly situated. In a friendly neighborhood.
What do you think of these?
Similar?
I just got them.
Who had them before you?
John Candy's gonna discover what a month in paradise.
What?
Is all about summer rental.
Sorry. I just brought my audio here. That way they won't see it. Hello.
Hello. Lone Star.
Sorry, Ron. Switch.
Hello, Vinny. What do you want?
Get ready for a new breed of heroes.
Hey, open up! I'm a special officer. Give me your car.
What are you nuts? Get out of my sight.
Welcome to the world of private security.
Help! We're actually guarding garbage.
Get yourself cleaned up. You ever reassign?
Oh, don't be such a wussy. A little toxic waste isn't going to kill you.
Columbia Pictures presents... John Candy. Eugene Levy.
Hi.
Armed and Dangerous.
Tired of ordinary television? Don't touch that dial. SCTV is now on the air. Starring John Candy. Joe Flaherty. Eugene Levy. Andrea Martin. Rick Moranis. Catherine O'Hara. And Dave Thomas. Television like you've never seen it before.
He's a cop and she's a girl who's been around. But it looks like someone doesn't want him to make it. The word is out to stop him. The odds are 100-1 they won't get through, but there's no way they're going to give up. Clint Eastwood, The Gauntlet, rated R. Now...
hey, maybe you got sold.
Rat Boy. It's so hard.
Chatting with Larry Hankin. Here on Lava Lamps in a track theater. On KXSF 102.5 FM. And KPCR 101.9 FM.
He gives it to me. He gives me the comb. He sees me standing there with this old shoe I picked up. And he goes to the cameraman. John Candy goes to the cameraman. He says, where can Larry find this comb and that shoe? So the cameraman looks around, and there's this huge pile of garbage way the hell up. I would say it was about minimum of two stories. It was probably three stories high of just garbage, just a mound of garbage. So the cameraman says, why doesn't he find it on the top of that hill? Which was a hill of garbage. So John says, yeah, great, okay. And he goes to, and he gives me the comb. He says, Larry, go find you the shoe and the comb on the top of that garbage heap. So I go, yeah, cool, that's funny. I like that, okay. So I climb this hill of garbage, which is not fun at all. Climbing garbage is not what it sounds like. Well, I think maybe it is what it sounds like. It's climbing garbage. It's not fun. Okay, so I got to the top. But when I saw the movie and what the shot was, it was really funny. And that was John. I mean, you know, I get up on top of this, and it was a long shot. So you see the hill of garbage, and you see this little guy on top of it, me. Mm-hmm. And I'm waving what you could see with maybe the shoe, and you couldn't see the comb. And I found it. And then I think what I did is I fell off of it. I disappeared into it, is what it was like. It swallowed me up. Yeah, but it was funny. But that was John. I mean, what was it like working with John? He just thought funny. Whatever you tell him to do, he would make it funny. Weird. I mean, that's nearly impossible. To some people, to me, you know.
Okay.
I got to think about it.
I think I remember that scene, actually.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, that was me, John, and the cameraman. That was... But when I saw it in the movie... No, I tell you what. When I saw it in the movie, I laughed. But, no, when John said to the cameraman, where can Larry find this comb and this old shoe? And the cameraman looked around, and then he said, Larry, find it on top of that mound of garbage over there. And he pointed to this three-story-high mound of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
When he said that to me, I almost fell down laughing because I immediately saw the picture in my head of me on the top there. And I thought, wow, man, that is so fucking funny. And I go, yeah. So that's why I climbed the garbage. If it wasn't funny, I wouldn't have climbed that hill. It was really awful.
Wow.
I mean, it was slimy and sharp.
Ew, yeah. I can imagine.
Steel and glass and old stuff. Yeah. But it was so funny that I got... And as I'm climbing up, I'm saying, what? Quit show business? This is why I'm in it. As I'm climbing garbage for a laugh.
What are your...
Stuff up in it, so it's mine. It's Charlie Butch's. So he says, okay, so he split. So I'm cutting out pictures and pasting them on the wall. Like, you know, hey, this is where I live. This is Charlie Butch's. So I'm trying to be due diligent about my acting experience, you know, mm-hmm. and trying to get into the character. So I'm sitting there for about 5 or 10 minutes, just cutting and very busy and taping. And I look up, and there's Clint Eastwood standing outside of my cell, staring in at me. Now, I don't know how long he was there. I just look up, and he's just standing there, just watching me. And I look at him, and he looks at me, and he says, what are you doing? And I go, oh, well, I'm playing Charlie Butch, so I'm... And this is my cell, so I'm putting up pictures of stuff that Charlie would put up. So it looks like I've been living here for a while. And he just says, are you a method actor? And I go, no. And he goes, good, because I don't like method actors. And he walked away. And I go, whoa, man. Oh, man, that's bad. What just happened is bad, and I don't know why. I didn't do anything. I didn't say, you know. So, but he was angry. I mean, what he said, I don't like method actors. He him when I got on camera, and I wasn't, you know, stiff. I could just relax. So I followed him around all the time.
So it's interesting he also worked with his wife, Sandra Locke, on Rat Boy.
Well, I mean, we came such good buddies, if you could call us. I mean, for the shoot, we were not, you know, lifelong friends. But during the shoot, we got along fine, you know, because I was following him around. Finally, he accepted that, and I think he understood what I was doing, that I was just trying to get into Charlie Butts being with him, his character on the island, you know. See, my adjustment to Clint Eastwood's character and my character, Charlie Butts, was Charlie Butts was hanging around. I mean, the part was written to be around Clint Eastwood all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the reason Charlie Butts is with Clint Eastwood all the time is Charlie Butts was weak and Clint Eastwood's character was strong, and Charlie Butts didn't want to be anybody's girlfriend.
Wow.
So he figured, I figured, Charlie Butts figured, Clint Eastwood's character was protecting him. So it would behoove Charlie Butts to be friends. And it was in the next cell.
Mm-hmm.
Clint Eastwood's cell was next to Charlie Butts'
wow.
cell. So he became friends. This is my backstory. Nobody told me this. I made this up. But it got me through. That the reason Clint Eastwood allowed me was because to be friends with him. Because I was in the cell next to him, and he used me to help him get things. You know, you need a friend. And the friend was in the cell next to him. So that's why I hung around with Clint Eastwood, and I think Clint Eastwood understood, oh, I see. Larry is working on his character. He wants to be friends with me on camera, so that's cool. So he allowed it, you know. He always ate with the extras, and I always ate at his table, lunch or dinner, whatever it was.
Wow, cool.
I was with him all the time. I wouldn't let him out of my sight. Kind of.
What are your memories being on Rat Boy?
Well, Rat Boy was totally different. She didn't know what the heck she was doing, really.
Okay.
But it was his girlfriend, and Clint recommended that she hire me. She said, well, because she was asking him a lot of questions. I mean, off camera, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Who should I get for this part? Who should I get for that part? And he said, well, for this guy, Larry, you know, he's good. But the story wasn't that great. It's just the narrative, the screenplay that she chose, but it was kind of in her. It would be easy for her to direct as a first movie. It had a young person as the lead, the rat boy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, a young story. She didn't have to deal with a lot of, you know, over macho guys and actors, you know, who'd give her guff because she was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so she made it easy on herself, and probably Clint, helped her pick a script that it would be easier
mm-hmm.
for her to direct for her first time.
Wow.
But, it, you know, it didn't do very well. And also, you know, at that time, I mean, Hollywood was filled with, you know, just overbearing macho idiots, you know, a-holes, as we call them.
Wow.
You
really?
Know, guys.
Wow.
So it was Clint Eastwood's crew, and they really gave her a hard time, man. I mean, I really felt sorry for her in a way. I mean, I didn't do anything to help her, but I didn't do anything to get in her way either. I mean, I just try to just be cool and not bother, you know, not just do my homework, you know,
mm-hmm.
just come prepared. But she had a tough time with the crew.
Wow.
They laughed at her a lot. And I know about that because on Escape from Alcatraz, it was his crew also. And I was in the barrel for a while. I mean, they got on my case because they saw that Clint would put me on, or the director would put me on. Now, the director would put me on, punk me, as it were, nowadays. But he did that with people he liked. They're old school. Clint and Don Siegel are very old school. They're from the 50s and 60s.
Wow.
And more from the 50s. So they did the, and they would tell me old stories about the 50s, about making movies in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not like making movies in the 80s and 90s and 2000s. They got on my case on Escape from Alcatraz. Clint's crew saw that Don Siegel was punking me. Now, I didn't mind it too much because I knew we had a grandfather-grandson relationship, me and the director, Don Siegel. Or like an old uncle. You know, I mean, we were like family. He would put me in scenes that I wasn't in. He would say, because I always was in costume, always. And I would just stand by the camera and just watch them. I wanted to see how movies are made. And he'd say, "Hey, Larry, get in there." I go, what am I doing? It doesn't matter. Just get in the seat. And, you know, he just knew that every once in a while. Like, he'd see me stand. "Hey, Larry, what? Get in there. What? I don't, you know, what are you doing? Can I be playing checkers?" "Yeah, sure. Okay, get in there." It was like weird. And then he would put me on, you know, like I supposedly had a crying scene at the end where they leave me behind and I'm left in my cell all alone. And he said, "You got to cry in this scene because they left you behind." And I said, "I can't cry. I don't know how to cry. I'm not an actor." I mean, you know that. I mean, he hired me knowing that I wasn't an actor. He saw that right away. That's why he hired me. I mean, I was so naive. I was a great Charlie Buck. That's what I want. So I said, I can't. So he said, "Well, you better go into your dressing room and slap yourself silly because I want you to cry." And he was very adamant about it. And then he walked away. So I thought, wow, man. So I went into my dressing room and I slapped myself silly. It didn't work. I wasn't crying at all. But when I got on the set, and I said, "Well," he says, "Are you ready? Are you going to cry?" And I said, "Yeah." And I was lying, of course. I mean, I just wouldn't cop to it. I just wanted to see what would happen. Because I couldn't cry, so I might as well tell him in front. I'm not going to, you know. So he goes, "Okay, Larry, get in there," and then hit the camera like 2 inches from my face. It was a close-up. It was a choker, as they call it. Neck up. So he goes, "Action," and Larry cried. And I went, "Nothing happened. Nothing." And then he didn't even blink. He just goes, "Okay, cut." And he goes, "Hey, Harry, bring it in." So this guy Harry comes in, the guy on the crew. And you know these old grandma kind of perfume bottles? They're like little, they're cut glass, and they have little a tube and a bulb.
Yeah, I think
bulb and the spray comes out. Okay. So this guy Harry, this crew guy Harry, comes with a little grandma perfume bottle with the little bulb, the squeeze bulb. He comes over and he sticks the nozzle of this thing in between me and the camera, so it points across past my eyes, past the lens to the other side. And Don Siegel goes, "Are you ready, Larry?" And I go, "Are you ready to cry?" And I go, "Yeah, yeah." I mean, he knows I'm not going to cry. Well, why is he saying this? And he goes, "Are you ready to cry?" And I go, "Yeah, yeah." And he goes, "Okay." And action, camera, action, Larry cried. And this guy squeezes the bulb real hard once. And this very thin mist floats by through the camera, out the other side, you know, past the camera, out the other side. And my eyes started to tear up, and I started to cry. So, and then he goes, "Okay, cut! Larry, that was brilliant. Thank you very much. Moving on. One take. Boom." And I thought, what is that? What had happened? What did I do? And he said, "That was wintergreen, Larry. That we spray, and it makes you cry." And then he says, Don Siegel said to me, he said, that little bottle has gotten more actresses Academy Awards than you will ever know.
Whoa. that's trippy. So, anyways,
yeah,
I have a few more questions. Now let's talk about Seinfeld. Let's talk about Seinfeld.
What do you want to know about Seinfeld?
Was it crazy being on the set, or what was it like?
Well, I got to work with Larry David, so I saw how, you know, a professionally funny, you know, Hollywood genius, how he works. So that was kind of cool. He did something which I recognize, which is kind of cool. He stands beside the director. He doesn't direct. Excuse me. Okay, so he doesn't direct. What he does, he stands next to the director, and then he'll whisper in the director's ear, saying, "Ah, I want to talk to, you know, Seinfeld." He whispers. He says, "Cut. I want to talk to Seinfeld." So the director would say, "Cut," and then Larry David would say to Seinfeld, "Hey, I want to talk to you," and he would pull him aside, which I thought was kind of cool. He doesn't give directions out in the open. He pulls you aside and just tells you privately what. And I thought that was very nice of him to do that, very professional. So he pulls Seinfeld aside and he goes, you know, and he whispers, you know, "Oh, I wonder what he's saying," because that's what I wanted to hear. Well, what is the direction he's giving him? What is he saying? So he goes, blah, 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 blah. And then Seinfeld gets back in the scene and he says to Tom was the director. And he says, "Okay, Tom, you know, go on with the scene." So now Tom says, "Okay, and action." And they do the scene again. And now Seinfeld is funnier because of what Larry David had just whispered to him. And I was dying. And he would do this to his entire cast, his regular cast. He wouldn't do it to anybody else. And I was dying to know, oh man, what did he do? Because every time he'd pull him out of the scene, say blah, 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 blah. And they would go back into the scene, they'd do the exact same scene again, and maybe, you know, and the person that Larry David talked to, one of his regulars, they would do something different. I don't know, if there was a word, a motion, an action, something. He would do something different. And it would be funnier. And he would do this time and time again. He did it like three times in the week that I was there. I think I was there for a week or two. I don't remember how many days I did. But he did that like maybe two or three times. Enough for me to say, wow, this is a regular thing. And then one day in the two or three, I think it was only one week that I was on. He says to Tom, I was doing the scene. Oh, yeah, it was when I was talking to Costanza, and I was saying, you know, I don't want you to talk to me about apples or raisins or anything like that. It was between me and Costanza. It was that scene. Or any type of fried fruit, I think. Something, I don't remember the line. Okay, and then Larry David said, and then I cut, and then he goes, I want to talk to Larry. So he pulls me out of the scene. I go, oh wow, he's going to talk to me. He's going to give me something that I'm going to do, and it's going to be funny. And what he says is, he pulls me aside and he says, I know what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And the active word in that sentence was trying. That was an insult to me personally. What do you mean trying? You know, I'm thinking in my head, what do you mean trying? I'm doing it. Don't tell me trying. I'm a professional, and by now I'm thinking of myself as a professional actor now. So at this time, something, what do you mean trying? You know, so I said to him, he said, I know what you're trying to do. And he said it with like an attitude, like, I know what you're trying to do. You know, not anybody else. But even me, I know what you're trying to do. So I said back to him with the same attitude, you know. I mean, I don't care. I really don't. I said, oh, really? What am I trying to do? And he said, you're trying to do nothing. And it was exactly what I was trying to do. If you see that scene, there's no reason you should. But if you see that scene, you see that I'm not acting. I'm holding it all in.
Wow.
I'm passive aggressive. And he pinned me. Larry David pinned it. And I said, oh, and I was so amazed that he had said, you know, I know what you're trying to do. Oh, really, what are you trying to do? You're trying to do nothing. I was so amazed that I reacted that way. I got, oh, right, yeah, that's what I was trying to do. I mean, that's what I said. That's how I said it. Oh, right. You know, oh, yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. And then he said, and he leaned in and he whispered even lower, and he goes, well, you're doing something. And he walked away. And I thought, that's the greatest piece of direction I ever got. That's and I knew exactly what he meant, and I knew exactly he knew what I was trying to do, and that was the right answer. Do less. You're trying to do nothing, and you're still doing something. So I did nothing at all, you know, in the next take. And that was a scene that they kept, and that's a scene that you see, and it's really better. I mean, so what was it like being on Seinfeld? I got to see how cool and how funny Larry David knows. He knows funny. He really does. And that was kind of a relief, and that I discovered it, and that he, you know, was willing to share that with me by giving me this seemingly weird direction. I mean, you know, you're doing something.
Uh-huh.
That's great. That's so perfectly framed and concise. And I knew exactly what he was talking about. And I knew that he knew what I was trying to do. Yeah. And that's what a director should try to do. That's what a director should do. Get the actor to where he wants to go. You help the director helps the actor get where he wants to go. And John Huston told me the second and greatest thing about acting. He said, let me get it straight. He said, the job of the director is to cast the right actor. Because once you cast the right actor, leave him alone. Or why did you cast him? In other words, you cast an actor because of his choices through other movies that you've seen him in. That's why he came to the audition. That's why you asked him to be here. So leave the actor alone. Trust you picked the right actor, and just help him get to where now he chooses to go for this scene. So those are the two things that I remember. If I'm ever going to direct, those are the two things, you know.
Uh-huh.
Just cast the right actor and help him get to where he wants to go, and everything will be fine.
Uh-huh. And you were supposed to be, you were originally thought of to be the original Kramer?
Box of raisins on the coffee. Did you, by any chance, take them with you when you left?
Mario's Pizza. Just as she was. Hey, Mario! Remember us?
No.
We used to come in every day.
So where you been? We're tanking here.
We'll have two slices and two grape sodas.
Oh, thanks. That'll save us.
All right, make it the large sodas.
Hey, Jerry, remember Frogger?
I used to be so into this game. Getting that frog across the street was my entire life.
Yeah, and then you went on to... That's a good game.
Watch the truck. Double jump! Eat the fly! Eat it!
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, beat it, punk.
Hey, look at the high score, GLC. George Louis Costanza, that's not you, is it?
Yes! 860,000! I can't believe it's still standing! No one has beaten me in like 10 years!
I remember that night.
Oh, I was unstoppable.
That look you just gave me.
I gave a look?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's see some more Kramers.
Do your other helpers, your other crew, the cinematographer, the light man, the set designer, the sound guy. You can depend, you can ask them questions, you know, what should I do here? But those two things the director has to know. Oh, and the story, you have to know the story. Wow. What story are you telling? And tell a story.
Yeah, I got to say that episode of Seinfeld is really legendary, like all the others.
I guess, you know, I mean, that's just the luck of the draw. I mean, you don't know what's going to go and what's not going to go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I got Seinfeld, Friends, Breaking Bad.
Wow.
I mean, there's three right there. And then there's a couple of others that are, you know, they're just always on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, you know, you don't know until they're released.
Well, anyways, Larry, we're running out of time, but I have one more question.
Okay.
What was it like working with Chevy Chase on Vegas Vacation?
Oh, well, I mean, no, it was fine. I didn't work with him long enough to establish any kind of rapport.
Okay.
Really, the director was my friend, and I just demanded that I be in that movie. I said, hey, you're my friend. And he goes, oh, well, yeah, of course. He says, okay, then put me in the movie. I just said it like that. I said, I want to be in. He said, well, it's already cast. I said, I don't care. You are the director, and I want to be in the movie, and you're my friend. And he said, well, I'm your friend, but I don't know if I can put you in the movie. And then I say, well, put me in the movie, but I don't. And I gave him even a rule. I said, I want you to put me in the movie because you're my friend, but you can't make me cut my hair. And I don't know if you know the part, but when I was in the movie, I had long, very long hair.
Mm-hmm.
It was white, but it was long.
Okay.
But he wanted me to cut my hair, and I said, no, I'm not going to cut my hair. But I was already cast in it. He already said, okay, you're the, I think it was the marriage guy. And I married him.
Okay.
But yeah, I only said my lines to Chevy Chase, but we didn't even talk. I don't even think we said anything. You know, just, I said, blah, 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 blah. Boom, you're married, and boom, and that was it.
Wow.
Because I was just hanging around with my friend, the director, who gave me the job, because I demanded it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Larry, we just got finished here, but congrats again on your book. And
oh yeah, can I just say that guy? Everybody, that guy. It's a book, and it's going to be on Amazon on I think in March. So look for it. That guy.
It's I can't wait.
Okay, and it's called That Guy, A Cautionary Memoir. It's about a lot of stuff that I talked about, sort of, here,
mm-hmm.
but more. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank
really
you. It was very great talking to you, Larry. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
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 An A-Track Theater. Thanks to actor Larry Hankin for calling in again earlier. Forgot to ask him a question about the movie Billy Madison with Adam Sandler. Used to watch it every day on VHS.
Where the hell is he? I'm starving.
I ate some Triscuit crackers in the car. You should have had some.
Well, maybe if you told me they were delicious Triscuit crackers, I could have enjoyed them with you.
I'm sorry.
Well, sorry doesn't put the Triscuit crackers in my stomach, now does it, Carl?
aboard that I've always...
Treasure. A deadly cargo of plutonium. Survivors. Jacqueline Bisset.
Christopher.
Wheelhouse! What about these strangers? That's your family. I think everybody is lost.
Joseph Tuff.
Hi, you're listening to Lava Lamps, any track theater on KPCR 101.9 FM.
We'll be right back.
wondered whatever became of me. I'm living on the air and...
We've come to the end of another edition of Lava Lamps in a Track Theater. Thanks again to Larry Hankin for calling in. Thanks for tuning in to Lava Lamps in a Track Theater. I'm KXSF 102.5 FM and KPCR 101.9 FM. Hi. I'm Nurse Annabella, and I'm signing off. Going back home to watch some CD movies. Alright, see ya.
The sun goes down.